When you go to speak, one of the things they say is, get to know your audience. So we're going to do a little thing real quick, and so I can get to know my audience. So I need everyone to stand up. Everyone to stand up. You know, you'll go to a Mother's Day, or you'll go to like a wedding. Or if you've been saved less than 1 year, sit down. If you've been saved less than 1 year, sit down. Anyone? A couple? All right. Less than 5 years. If you've been saved less than 5 years, sit down. A couple more. All right. 10. Losing a couple. I'm going to jump all the way to 20. If you've been saved less than 20 years. Oh, Pastor Sam. Less than 30 years. And we got some. 40. All right. 50. Unbelievable. What? How long? 57. 60. Wow. All right, give yourselves a hand. We have got a bunch of long-term Christians in the house, so I can talk Christianese. If I start saying, Father Abraham, have many sons, you guys can start waving your arms, right? All right, good. Hey, you guys have a great church here. I've researched a lot of them, well over 1,000, in fact, in our city. And I just want to honor Pastor Sam and his wife for leadership. And so if we could just honor him. And it's not easy to give up the circle carpet right here, right? Because some guy who knows how to write backwards is going to get up here and who knows what he's going to say, but I didn't write backwards, just merely trick photography. And if you have your weekly, you see my sermon outline on the last page? Yeah. So there's a lot of space here, so I'm a creative guy. So if you want to doodle on it, feel free to doodle. If like you get something out of it in 5 minutes in the last 30 or 25, you want to just not pay attention, I'm okay with that. I would love it if you walk away with one phrase written in this blank space. Maybe it's a picture, maybe it's three or four words, but something that you say, when I walk out of these doors today, this is my takeaway for today. Normally someone's going to get up here and say, this is your takeaway for today. Well, in week 4 of Dare to Share, we've covered a lot of what we need to do. And so I'm going to share a little bit, and then if you have something, write it down. You can keep paying attention, or if you're bored, well, if I had service in here, you could be on Facebook, but I don't have service on my phone. So, this is Memorial Day weekend, right? Memorial Day was originally called Decoration Day because after the Civil War, they wanted to honor the 500,000 people that gave their lives. So they established Decoration Day, and then they kept that going. Well, after World War II, another 400,000 people died, Americans died in that war. And it was turned into Memorial Day. And so we have 1.1 million Americans that have given their lives during war for our country. So I stand here, you know, on this eve of this Memorial Day to honor. And I have a story about a Vietnam vet. And he spent 4 years over in Vietnam and then came back to America. 1972 was a great year for him because the TV show MASH came out. You see, I have my MASH outfit on right here. 11 series, right? If you were up Monday nights, you could sit down on the couch and watch Hawkeye and make fun of Frank Burns or Charles Winchester. Well, he also had a daughter born, his second child, and had a son and then had a daughter, so 72 was a good year. Late 70s and 80s, they started watching the show together, MASH, you know, poking fun at the Vietnam while they were talking about the Korean War. And in 1987, I actually started playing soccer with that vet's son in high school. And then in 1991, I started dating that vet's daughter. And in 93, we were married. We got 3 kids right away. Boom, boom, boom. And we've been together 26 and a half years now. And my wife has helped shape me into who I am today. And so I'd like to talk about the different areas that we have in our lives. And I'm just going to do 3 basic areas. So our personal, our spiritual, and our professional. And I think people derive the most pleasure from when they find the intersection of those three. So you say, yeah, when I wasn't saved and I got saved, that was pretty good. But we can be unsatisfied as an unsaved person. I've certainly had years where I've been unsatisfied as a saved person. But when we're operating in our gift, when we're using the passions and the talents and the stuff that He's given us, that right there in the epicenter is ultimate pleasure until we get to heaven. Now, like for me, you say spiritual, you know, maybe that's all the way on the other side of professional. And I just challenge each of us to look at, you know, what areas, if we look at all three of them, could we overlap to find out what we're going to do? So I just like to share a little bit about myself. And I kept my circles separate for most of my life. I didn't want my personal interacting with my spiritual or my spiritual interacting with my professional. So if I look at the spiritual side, I've been saved nearly 40 years, so I would have been standing up a long time. But if you could move to the next slide. I went to a Christian school. I was in church 3 to 4 times a week, Sunday morning, Sunday night, you know, youth on Wednesdays, prayer breakfast on Saturdays. My parents led 2 small groups. I've served on church boards. I've worked with children, worked with youth, led young adult ministries, read through the Bible dozens of times. Then I look at my personal life. And in 2009, I began a transformation that went from a sedentary, overweight adult to one that finished multiple Ironmen. You know, 140.6-mile races. And the half Ironman, like that one that clogs up Delaware here in August. I like adventures. I did a 5-day road trip from here to Alaska and back with 6 guys. We spent 90 minutes in Alaska. I don't recommend that. And I'm a husband. I'm a father of 3 adult children. My daughter was here in the first service, my youngest. And they're all married or getting married by next year. And I look at myself as a professional. I was trained as an engineer, graduated with a mechanical engineering degree, and I designed cars right up the road, Acuras and Hondas, for a dozen years. And I have, you know, patents from that. And then I went into GE Healthcare, where I learned the physics of MRI machines and how you can inject bodies with a breaking down radioactive source to show where tumors are in the body and the technology used to locate those. I became a consultant and a speaker on innovation. Last year, I released a best-selling book in healthcare on how to establish systematic health innovation in healthcare. So if I look at each of those different areas, you know, at the core, I'm somebody who thinks there is always better. So in the background of this slide is something called the product life cycle. And at the beginning, something is introduced, it works. But eventually, over time, it doesn't work anymore. So if we go back to the late 70s when MASH was on TV and you had to wait 1 week to see what the next episode is. You know, in the early 2000s, the industry said, okay, we're going to release it on DVD and then you guys can watch it on DVD whenever you want to watch it. And then, like, who wants a DVD? We can stream it on Netflix, or now you can stream it on Hulu. So the same MASH series that my father-in-law watched with his daughter, my wife and I are watching right now on Hulu at night. And so we think about these things on, it's the same message, right? It's the same entertainment, but we can get digested a bunch of different ways. So we can think about our message that we have as Christians, the way we operate as a body of Christ, as the Big C Church. And what does that mean? Now, death is a traumatic event. So this headstone was actually placed just 2 days ago. This is the veteran I was talking about. And I have vivid memories of the end with my father-in-law. And so if we think about those times where we have something big like this happen. You know, we have a death in the family. Our memories are so sharp. Right? We can still picture the last conversations, the way they laughed, the way they smiled. So when I think about as a church, and if I think about the 12 disciples, and as they're getting together that last week when Jesus was crucified, and that whole time around that, it's going to have very powerful moments. Just like when we buried my father-in-law. So let's look at Jesus' last moments. And I'm just going to pull out a couple of them. Right? He asked his disciples, hey, I need you to go secure a place. We're going to have dinner together. And Jesus knew this was going to be his last meal. He was on death row. And, you know, so he gathered his disciples together, and we can go through the chapters of John 13 to 17, and he washed their feet, and he shared, you know, these are the important things for you guys to do. And then he prayed at the end, the last time that he prayed with all of them together. Probably be a pretty important prayer, right? He said, God, I pray that they would be one as you and I are one. To demonstrate unity, cooperation. Pretty important. Then we think about crucifixion the next day. And he's on the cross dying horrible death. And he forgives. Right? He's got a felon hanging on the cross right next to him. He's like, yeah, you'll be with me today. He says, Father, forgive these Romans and these Jews, for they don't know what they do. Very powerful statement. So much so that the centurion who does his crucifixions all the time is like, yeah, surely this guy was the Son of God. Go through the resurrection where he conquered death. Right? And it's so easy for us to take that for granted because we've been in the church forever. It's like, yeah, Jesus rose from the dead. That's awesome. It is awesome. Because that means he won. Right? Now, if we go to the ascension, right, he spent some, you know, some time with his disciples, ate fish with them, you know, hung out, teleported himself behind locked doors. That'd be pretty cool. And then he also ascended. That would be pretty cool, right, too. But we didn't have the ropes to tie me up. But anyway, that'd probably get some good Instagram clicks or Facebook Live. Facebook Live, that'd be good. But you imagine if he said something right before he went up, how much that'd be emblazoned in. And what did he say? He said, go everywhere and make disciples. Teach them to obey all the commandments that I have taught you. I've been in church a long time. I've read the Bible a lot of times. What were the commandments that Jesus told us? Oh, thanks for asking. Because I happen to have a slide that has them on it. It's the next one. Oh, that's it? Okay, so there's, you know, depend on scholars, between 40 or 50, you know, if he's affirming the Ten Commandments. So there's probably a couple missing on here. But I just organized them in three categories. I thought, hey, here's what we do with spiritual maturity. Here's what we do, act towards others. And then, you know, some other ones. Number one, you know, that he reaffirmed, it was in Deuteronomy 6:5 and in Leviticus 19 and 18, to love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Right? And love your neighbors, yourself. You know, when we get reading the Gospels, Matthew 22 and Mark 12 and Luke 10, you know, one of the guy's teachers comes up afterwards and he's a kind of show off and he's like, I know the first two commandments. But he's like, who's my neighbor? Right? And then he goes into the story, the Good Samaritan. They're like, oh yeah, the reject, the people we don't talk to, those guys. Oh, you want me to do something cool for him? Oh, wow. It's hard to love those people. You know, but what if as Christians, we just stuck to this list to begin with? We said, look, if Jesus is the quintessential experience on earth for people to come to him, what if we just followed the things that he demonstrated? And if I look at the spiritual maturity ones, I'm not seeing a lot of don'ts. I'm still not saying permission to do some cool things, right? So, you know, hey, end disputes quickly. You know, make your prayers be like the Lord's Prayer. Ask God for what you want to have. Exercise spiritual power. You know, we look at what towards other people. Oh, don't judge others. Man, that's so easy, and I love it because I can hashtag destroy them. You can get in Twitter battles or your online community about the barking dog in the neighbor's house that won't shut up. And or we look at the unfortunate people. You know, the ones that are doing things that no way we would ever find ourselves doing. And so I think, man, let's start with these, you know, with these charges that he gave us. So if we look at the Christian continuum from the time we were lost, right? If we on the y-axis here we have righteousness, right? It's becoming more like Jesus, and on the x-axis is our lifetime. So some of ours are shorter than others, but we are completely unacceptable until we become a Christian, right? And then we become a Christian, we automatically are worthy to spend eternity with him. But then there's a growth period, because the second we become a Christian, we're not godlike. You know, Jesus said, "Be perfect as my Father in heaven is perfect." Well, what does that mean? Complete virtue. And so, okay. So we have lapses, you know, we go back and we, you know, misbehave, or we have, you know, times of growth. But let's zoom in and consider what spiritual maturity could look like. And so in Ephesians 4, 11 and 12, Paul talks about, hey, here are the five, you know, kind of offices of the body of Christ. We've got people that are apostles, evangelists, prophets, pastors, teachers, right? That's in the background in red. Like, which one of those do we fall in? And all of them were given to us for the edification of the body, the big church. And then I think, wow, I've heard Galatians 5, 22 and 23 said over and over and over again. In fact, I went to Google it, fruits of the Spirit, for this, and all these fruit baskets came up. I'm like, oh, that's such a great graphic. I'm not going to throw it in here. Because I think when we think about the fruits of the Spirit, we think about bananas and apples and pears. But if we look at the word in the Greek, it actually means evidence. So if we are acting in a life of the Spirit, the evidence is going to come out in these nine ways: love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and gentleness and goodness, faithfulness, self-control. So for the past couple years, I've been challenging myself, how do I improve my life so that the Spirit can work through me? So it's evidence, right? At the end of verse 23, it says, there has never been a law against these things. Nobody in any culture wants to shut these nine things down. So this little graph I have, I just challenge you guys to look. Think about those nine. If you don't know them, just look them up. Where are you in relative to the person that you would like to emulate? So I'm not talking about Jesus or God, but you're like, man, that person knows love. Actually, I think they're so crazy about love that I don't even know. And if you don't know what love is, 1 Corinthians 13, right? Which a couple of these other ones are included in that. Is it patience? Like me, do you need to work on your self-control? You know, like every day we just say, God, help me to demonstrate more. And I just see my dad next to me. He's a Bible professor. And Adam, what would Jesus do? I'm like, well, he probably wouldn't give the one way to heaven sign. I probably should think about something else. You know, but it's not just that. It's like every year we can go year after year and look back. What were we last year in patience? What were we last year in love? And how are we growing and becoming closer to him? And why is this important? Because I see a lot of models that say spiritual maturity is not knowing about God, knowing God, learning about God, becoming sold out to God, and then reproducing. Any 80-year-olds in here had babies? No, we're creating offspring much younger in life, right? So we should be looking at the beginning of the curve and creating it. So let's take a look at our city, right? Jesus told Peter, well, he told Simon, he's like, I'm going to rename you, Peter, and on this rock, I'm going to build my church. So if we look at the rock, the church, this is Columbus. 750,000 people are born again. They're on that rock. Right now is our party day, right? We have Sunday morning party on the rock, which is here. But look in the ocean. We've got 1.4 million people who are like, nope. Now, 700,000 of them will say they're associated with Christianity, but they haven't been born again. They haven't dedicated their lives to God. 1.4 million people in those waves. that unless they get up on that rock, they're done. Like, man, that's... So when I was driving on 33 one day down to 270 going from, you know, Marysville into Dublin, and God said, I want you to share the gospel with everyone in Columbus. Well, I just wanted to drive into the guardrail. Like, it was inspiring for me. At the same time, it was intimidating for me because I didn't know the statistics. But now here we have them, right? And Barna does research. So some of those were in my backwards writing video. 38% of people aren't in church at all, ever. And that number's going down 1% every year. So we're not trending towards more people coming in here. We're trending for more people going away. 71% of society says, I have zero questions about faith. In fact, I don't need to talk about faith. But what do they have questions about? They're anxious, right? They're depressed. They, you know, their kids are doing this. They're worried about that. So we do have that answer. And I was meeting with Bishop Clark, the pastor for First Church of God down on the east side, and he told me this week when I was interviewing him. He said, I just read the study.
He's got this real low voice. Adam, I just read the study. No one cares what's happening in the church.
No one cares what's happening in the church. Like, we're on that rock, and we have these barriers around us, and no one cares what's happening in the church. Now, we have the answer. We all believe in the answer, and we've been living for decades knowing that. Now, I was saved when we had to burn our Kiss albums in the barrel outside, you know, and like all the Rapture movies were out, and I had nightmares about being not making the Rapture and seeing my friends float up around me. Like, I didn't want to go to hell. That's why I got saved 20, 30, 50 times. And but if we look at us actually having the hope, you know, whether it's the emotional hope, it's, you know, or whether it's the physical hope, you know, God told us that He was going to give us miraculous powers. We were going to do signs and wonders like more than He did. So if we look at what's happening in Columbus as far as the churches are considered, these are stats. This next slide is stats that are from my viewpoint. And so when I see a church like Delaware Christian Church, you guys are in that top number. Right, you have health. So, but we only have about 50 healthy churches that are growing well. The two aspects that I see of these churches is they're looking externally, like the thing you have on June 7th coming up, and they're seeking the Spirit. Right? They're saying, God, what is it? What is it you can use in me? How can I get these circles to overlap? And when I see that, and I see these healthy, vibrant churches, we have 200, and I use the term poised because it depends what they do next. Whether they're going to reach that person off that rock or whether they're going to turn around and talk to the person next to them on the rock. And a lot of those churches, tradition is weighing the heaviest. The repeat. They're waiting until Monday evenings to watch the next MASH episode. I can watch 256 MASH episodes in a row right now if I want to. Right? The Monday night model is obsolete. These 200 are waiting saying, are we going to be able to get past the tradition to reach the lost? And then we have 750 that I say uncertain. Drought and decline are the major factors that define them. 750. And so we think, okay, well, let's take advantage of the ones that are doing, you know, that are healthy. Let's take, you know, talk to the ones that are poised. So if we look at the barriers that we have to face, we're sitting on the rock. The people are in the ocean. They're having fun right now. At some point, they die. What are the barriers? 71% of people say, I don't even have a question about faith. So we go to the next slide. The 750,000 versus the 1.4 million, that means about each of us need to get about two people saved in our city. Which, I mean, we could do that, right? That doesn't seem like a daunting task. You know, last week when Sam was talking about, you know, sharing the good news, like sharing the gospel, evangelism, sharing the good news. And he talked about, hey, we share the good news on social media and we tell our buddies, oh man, this is the greatest thing that ever happened to me. 40% of Christians don't have any unsaved family or friends. And an even higher number than that haven't had a single conversation about faith in the past year or more. And I know because that was me. Like, I've shared the gospel more times in the past 2 years than probably a magnitude of 100 in my entire life before that. And I just thought, man, how can I make it simple? How can I make it? And Barna and Alpha, which Sam referenced last week, they did this study. And these are the three things that they say are the easiest ways to bring up faith. So it's not that people don't want to talk about it or hear about it. It's if you would do these three things, they would be open. Number one is a one-on-one or small group casual conversation. Just sitting down, Starbucks, having a chat. Sitting at a break room, having a chat. On the boat, Alum, having a chat. Golf buddies in the 19th hole. But the two factors is they don't want you to judge them, and they don't want you to drive to a conclusion. Right? Man, I can't tell you how many times I love those "you're going to burn in hell" megaphone guys. Like, man, I was like, yeah, I want to do that when I get older. Because, like, I want to have that hate for God that the Old Testament God had, you know. And, of course, God hates sin now, but Jesus is demonstrating love. And it's like, what is it about that person? And I had a son who was raised in church, and he became addicted to drugs. And I tell you, my view on drugs never changed as fast as it did until my son started using. And then it changed. I had an even tougher look when he tried to take his own life. You hear about it, you see about it out there, and you're like, that doesn't affect me. But then when your son's in it, man, how do I love my son when he's doing the lifestyle that I don't? When he doesn't feel like he has hope, but he's heard on countless Sundays that hope. And I'm proud to say that God took him, turned his life around, he's plugged into his church. And he rediscovered what the relationship with God meant himself. But when we truly love, we can accept the person behind those statistics. So if we're not judging, if we're not driving to a conclusion, the Romans road, say the sinner's prayer, but we're letting the Spirit do that, then maybe they come back to us. The next thing is they want to have an eye-opening spiritual experience. Number one thing atheists would say, if I had an eye-opening spiritual experience, man, I've seen some eye-opening spiritual experiences. Personally, on missions trips, around, like, God wants us to do those. You know, to be able to say something, to confirm something that they've been thinking. You know, I had a lady come up to me after the first service. She's like, you know, God's been moving on my heart to work with, you know, pregnant women who are young. It's like, when God confirms something like that, it's like this eye-opening spiritual experience. And then the last thing is, if I saw churches cooperating together in their community. Like, Christianity as a brand is tarnished. We've got systemic sins that we've been doing. You know, we've got the sexual abuse, and people don't separate denominations. Like, all those people who are church are all one group. Right? The judgment that we've been evoking on downtown or streets of Las Vegas. But if our churches were working together in our community, they would be open to it. So let me share some statistics to close the service. I've done a lot of research, like I said, about Columbus, and I interview at least every week a ministry leader or a church leader. And I've been, my best friend's a police officer in Linden, and he's taken me on crime scenes and people get shot and confiscating drugs. And, you know, I was in Franklinton talking to, you know, prostitutes this past week. And, you know, we're number two opioid overdoses behind West Virginia. Number four human trafficking. And these aren't people who are kidnapped. These are women who don't know any other way out. Some of them, their moms are selling them because they can't afford mortgage 12 years old, on the streets, getting sold to pay mortgage to buy food. We have infant mortality rate in downtown Columbus that is worse than a third world country. Like worse. To have less likely of you to have your kid born in Columbus than if you went somewhere else. 3,000 homeless youth. Star House, Ann Bischoff, runs the only youth homeless drop-in center in Central Ohio. She had 2,200 visits last year. 20% of those had kids, babies. Now, in the state of Ohio, we have 16,000 kids. This is not Franklin County, but in our state, we have 16,000 kids who don't have parents that they're living with. And over our entire state, we have nearly 2 million people who don't know where their next meal is coming from. You know, so if we have churches that are cooperating together to solve some of these things, I like to challenge church communities to say, what if you gave 10% of your volunteer hours to this? Like we had, we tithe to our community, or we gave 10% of our budget to social services like this. You know, imagine the barriers that would get ripped down if we had a single focus point that can say, here's what the church is doing. And we've got some exciting things going on. We're partnering with 104.9 The River. We're partnering with Mission Columbus. We're partnering with Catalyst of Columbus, where we're going to create a database of the good stuff that's happening, the churches that are doing it, and we're going to broadcast it and we're going to share it. Because in 2030 or 2025, 2030, we want the front page of the Columbus Dispatch to say, city changed. And the cool thing is there's nothing difficult between here and there. We know the little simple things that we can do. So as you look at your blank back, I just want to give you a couple moments, if you haven't written some down on this, just to write something on it. And I would say pray about it, but the Spirit talking to you right now is telling you what you're supposed to do. The only thing you need to pray about is how it's going to happen. And not everybody may have something, but if you do, put it on here. Share it with somebody afterwards. Because we're on that rock and we're saved, but 1.4 million people aren't. And we do have the good news. And you guys are a healthy church. And you're going to make an impact here in Delaware. I know you are. This is the fastest growing county in Central Ohio. I think all of Ohio. So you've got people coming to you.